on civil society. Well, I can't say very much about civil society because I don't really belong to one. It's very interesting to me that in December, civility seems to decrease as people become more and more anxious. And so there are more horns honking. There's more digital communication using only a single digit. And that bespeaks a certain incivility in my view. And all of this is part of a society that is not clear about how it is that we should be together and how it is that we can inform each other of our truths and communicate and tell the truth in some way that is useful as opposed to counterproductive. On day off, I was moderating a panel and doing a talk back for another group, and I want to specify it was another group. This would never have happened here. Afterwards, a gentleman, I'm using that term in the same way that cable television uses the term gentleman when talking about a mass murderer and fugitive. A gentleman comes up to me and informed me exactly what he thought of the marital status of my parents at the time of my conception and birth, the nature of my character, and he used some words that were relatively vulgar and insulting. I was not wounded. I did not melt. I understood that this was about him, not about me. But I did ask him in a very friendly manner, why do you think that it's okay to come up to a relative stranger and be angry and insulting? And his answer was, well, it's what I felt. And I felt the responsibility to tell my truth. Well, incidentally, I should tell you what his grievance was. His grievance was very understandable. We had a talk back, and I didn't call on him. I didn't know him. Had I known his character and his passion, I certainly wouldn't have called on him on purpose. But this was just a question of good instincts on my part, as opposed to really picking on him. Were he ever to come back to anything that I did, I would be very careful not to call on him. But this was complete happenstance. There had been three men in a row, and I wanted to balance the equities, which might be a good idea or bad, but it didn't call for his reaction. But he confused, as I think we in our society sometimes confuse, truth, candor, against hypocrisy. When I was living in Berkeley in the 60s, there was a lot of pressure and a kind of social movement to always tell the truth, however bad, however ugly. What we owed ourselves and each other was the unvarnished truth. And so we would just practice getting in each other's face and saying anything that came to our minds, well, came to our mouths, sometimes bypassing our minds. And that was supposed to be candor. And to withhold that candor was to be inauthentic, hypocritical, and somehow not really playing for the team. I had problems with that from the get-go because it seems to me that we do owe each other the truth as we understand it. We owe each other the knowledge of who we are, what we stand for, what we won't stand for. But it doesn't have to be screaming, insulting, and condescending. There are ways to tell the truth nicely. This is the part of the sermon that's about the issue of civility, which is not hypocrisy. Civility is understanding that the root is with civilization and with citizen, is that we are in this together. And intent and motive count in communication. And there are some people and some times and some subcultures that think that candor is the greatest value, and saying anything, if it's true, meaning if I feel it, it must be okay. I remember when I was very young reading Ibsen's The Wild Duck. And the whole theme of that is how the truth and the facts can be used not to inform, not to heal, but to punish. How somebody's ideas and fantasies and gossip and intuitions lead to destructive behavior, behavior that is destructive of another person and of the society in which they live. Candor can be done with kindness. I remember very clearly the first funeral I ever conducted, and I won't say it was as traumatic to me as it was for the family, but it was pretty traumatic for me because I didn't know what I was doing. And fortunately, the decedent, that sounds very clinical, doesn't it? My congregant, Harold, who had passed away, I had married 2 weeks before to his second wife. And I had gotten the call from the newlywed and now widowed wife saying that he had died on their honeymoon. Don't go there. But I assure you that everybody took some consolation in that part of the story. But I was faced in my first funeral with the new widow and the divorced wife and the two kids. And fortunately, he had belonged to a temple also. And his old rabbi, his former rabbi, Rabbi Zucker, was there. And I'm this kid who hadn't a clue what to do. And I said, "Rabbi, what do I do?" And he said, "Tell the truth nicely." They're probably the most important words of moral information that I've ever been given. Tell the truth nicely. To withhold our anger, to withhold our rage, to withhold our condescension is not something that is dishonest and breaks off communication. If we're going to talk to someone, if we're going to talk to anyone, usually there is something that we want to accomplish, something that we want to communicate, something that we want somebody to consider and maybe even do. But so often what happens is we forget to ask ourselves what the purpose of the communication is. And there's a really pretty simple question that we should be asking ourselves. Do I want to just blow off steam, be self-indulgent, and wound somebody? Or do I want to change behavior, convey an idea, and at least have that idea considered? When we come to the decision about which of those two things we want to do, that kind of informs the tone and the language. My friend who accused me of the terrible crime of not calling on him probably was not effective in either wounding me or making me predisposed to call on him in the future. He didn't consider what the object was, only his need to vent. Well, sometimes we have to vent. I understand that. Sometimes I vent. Sometimes, not recently, walls or doors get little indentations because I'm human, but they're walls and doors, not people. And there's a difference between people and things. Yes, we owe ourselves truth. But not all of the truth, all of the time, because that can turn into self-indulgence and push people away as opposed to making people think. and hear us and make connections with us. And that's a very important part of what civility is and what civilization is. There's also another meaning to the word, and living in a civil society is more than behavior. It's also the sense of living in a society with many different views, many different religions. We can talk about sometimes civilians being non-military, non-clergy. And this part of what civil society is about really struck me this last week during the Republican debate, when they were asked all kinds of theological and religious questions. Despite the fact that our Constitution states very explicitly and in relatively clear and modern language, there shall be no religious test for holding of office. So, do you believe in this book? Every word of it to be true? Seemed to me to be both an inappropriate question for civil society and civil and secular governance, and also a silly question. It's a silly question because, well, I suppose an awful lot of preachers practice politics without a license, and an awful lot of politicians practice theology without a license, and Huckabee certainly had the upper ground on that, considering that he was the only one that actually had a theology degree. But it was kind of fun to watch them stuttering about, do you believe every word is the truth? And to hear Giuliani say, I read it. It's the Word of God. Okay, there's a good response. And then to hear the same question asked to Romney, and he said, it's the Word of God. Well, do you believe in it? It's the Word of God. Is it literally true? It's the Word of God. It's the broken record theology, because they were all afraid of saying what Huckabee, who had the only really reasoned response, said, which was, well, you know, it's metaphor, it's truth, it is the Word of God, and I read it, and I don't understand all of it, and I don't take it all literally. Some of it's metaphor. When it says, go pluck out your eyes, we're not about to go do that. He didn't use my favorite example. Ye are the salt of the earth, and I don't think that entails having to grind you up and put you on the main course, that there's always questions of interpretation. But it's the inappropriateness of the question that asks politicians to respond yea or nay to huge theological issues, and to do for theology and theological discourse what this whole process has done to political discourse, which is to play gotcha, yes, no, true, false, instead of allowing the space for real conversation. They're waiting and trying to make someone else make a mistake. Now, there is some progress in our theological discussions and politics. Once upon a time, not so many years ago, relatively speaking, the Catholicism of JFK was a big issue. Today, the Catholicism of Rudy Giuliani is not a big issue, except to the extent that his critics think he should have practiced it a little more faithfully. And the Mormons are now in the position that JFK was in a little over 47 years ago. Is that true? He was running in 1959 for 1960 election. Oh my goodness. So that's some progress. But it is still true, and I think deplorable, and this is a theological as well as a political statement, it is still true and I believe deplorable that these politicians are forced to act as if they were religious. First of all, belonging to a particular denomination clearly does not mean that you are living the life and walking the walk. There's a huge difference between talking the talk and walking the walk. And so they are asking people about their theological beliefs and if they go to church and what church they go to and all of these questions. And you cannot legitimately infer what somebody's policy is going to be from their religious affiliation. Giuliani has been pro-choice up until the point that he wasn't. Romney was pro-choice up until the point that he wasn't. You can have two Baptists in two very different positions. You can have the great religious viewpoints and say we must listen to the Pope when he says abortion is bad and birth control is bad, but not necessarily listen to the Pope when he says capital punishment is bad and war is bad. They are picking and choosing from the smorgasbord, and I don't object to that. That's the way it should be. But we've made this gotcha test of religiosity. Anybody here think that an out-of-the-closet atheist could be elected a president of the United States? There's only one out-of-the-closet atheist in the entire Congress, Pete Stark. And he's a Unitarian Universalist. I actually, when he was running for Congress for the first time, he was in my pulpit in Hayward, California. And I want to tell you that being a Unitarian Universalist had no particular influence on his ability to say anything with anything like candor. So the religious affiliation is, I think, not appropriate. It's not an appropriate part. The issues of somebody's character and behavior are appropriate. Those things that inform them are between us and whatever it is that we find to be holy and inspirational, that touch us and move us. It is remarkable to me how easily some of the religious forget, and I have to quote Huckabee on this, it's not an endorsement, believe me, but I would love to see a Unitarian Universalist church lose its 501c3 status for seeming to endorse Huckabee. I mean, just the idea of that just appeals to my sense of irony. But he quite rightly reminded all of the righteous and self-righteous that at the heart of the gospel are loving the people who are here and feeding the hungry and clothing the naked, and what you do for the least of the brethren, you do for me. And the whole idea of the social gospel and social justice that have been forgotten because people pick and choose what part they're going to take. So that's why I think that that's an irrelevant conversation. Civilization, some people complain, is a thin veneer that covers our barbarism. So? And the opposite of that would be uncovered barbarism? There's a wonderful quote by Kenneth Lord Clark. People sometimes tell me that they prefer barbarism to civilization. I doubt if they've given it a long enough trial. Like the people of Alexandria, they are both bored by civilization, but all the evidence suggests that the boredom of barbarism is infinitely greater. Civility and civilization are the acknowledgement that we share a world and a society. Civility is not a hypocrisy. It is a commitment not to let the effluence of what burns at us pollute the waters of society. It doesn't say be silent. It doesn't say be untruthful. But it says what I put into society stays there. And I can work to cleanse the waters, to purify the waters, or to muddy the waters. I can make it better or I can make it worse by how I treat my sisters, my brothers, my friends, my family, all of the people with whom I interact. The waters of our society are certainly troubled. There are lots of forces that push us away from each other, that make us anxious and therefore often angry. There is a confusion between what is the inner truth that I must speak to power and what is self-indulgent. And if we question our own motives, and motive matters, I love the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do not do unto others what is hateful to you, or Kant's categorical imperative, where he said to turn off the cell phone before coming to church. No, Kant didn't say that, I'm sorry. Kant did, however, recommend Verizon over AT&T. But he said, act as the maxim of your action should be universalized to a general principle, which is how we think about things, what we want to accomplish, makes a difference in the choices that we make. It isn't simply blow off steam in being self-indulgent, but understand that we live in the same environment and we have choices of toxicity or being benign, of telling the truth, but not necessarily all of the truth in the way that our emotions inform us, but telling the truth, as my old friend Rabbi Zucker said, telling the truth nicely. It's a thin veneer, but it's an important one. Closing, my favorite Gandhi quote. When asked of what he thought about Western civilization, Gandhi said, I think it would be a very good idea.